instant illumination. A writer learns from those who are superior. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the instant illumination. A writer learns from those who are superior. Now, what's that all about? What's that all about? What writer is superior? Well, we're not talking about the content. We're not talking about the ideas that he's writing about. We're talking about the technique. A writer learns from those who are superior. Now, take for instance, Louis L'Amour. Louis L'Amour is one of the most maligned writers in history. People put him down. Oh, that's just cowboy stuff. That's just early Americana stuff. That's just... He is one of the greatest authors on the face of the earth. He has sold more books than almost the Bible. Fantastic. Fantastic. And still selling strong. He has written umpty-dump 26, 35, who knows how many books, and more are being found in his archives that hadn't been put in print yet. He's written gloriously. Now, smarty, what makes you think he's a good writer? Well, people buy him and read him. Well, what makes people want to buy him and read him? Well, because of the stories he writes. What makes people want to buy him and read him? Because of the stories he writes. Because he writes in a style that is so charming and so compelling and so inclusive that when you read it, you are right there. You are right there in the midst of whatever story he's telling. And some of the stories may be way out, because he goes back into history. He takes ideas from history, and then he puts a person in there or people in there who never were there because he wasn't there. He didn't know them. So he creates people who logically could have been living those experiences. And he makes those people so relative in the relative world to what we're living that people love to read it. Now, what is his style? What is his modus operandi? What manner in which he presents these things does he have that makes him so compelling, that makes him so interesting? Well, most people would not say this about this macho boxer, you know, wrestler, shoot him up and knock him down cowboy type of guy. But he puts love in there. Not the sexual love interest that he may write about people who have a relationship, but you never know anything about their sexual proclivity. And you never know whether this man and woman are going to get married until they have a wedding or something like that. And they don't play around with their sex. They are themselves. They are beautiful beings, just like you and I. If you start thinking, how often do you think about sex during the day? And you say, oh, a lot. You're full of beans. You think of sex very little compared to your 24-hour day. In your 24-hour day, you think of it very little. How often do you think about food? Oh boy, I think of food a lot. You do not. You have a vacant spot up there. You think about food whenever it's mealtime or whenever you smell something good. But the minute you walk away from the bakery, you've forgotten it. You're not compelled to go back to that bakery if you don't do it while you're there. You may say, well, I better pick up some bakery for tonight, and you may not even go back to that same bakery. But you see, we are momentary people. We are now people. We are people who live in the now. And when you read Louis L'Amour, you're living in the now. You're living in this moment now, and his books are so joyful and so compelling and so wonderful. Now, the Bible is the most sold book in the world. Why? Because you're expected to have a copy in your home. Do you read it? Quite likely not. Maybe a little, but most likely not. The Bible may be the most predominant book in society, and that means the Bibles, Christian Bible, the Buddhist Bible, and all these others, but they're not the most read. Now you say, well, some little old ladies, yeah, sure, it's a little old lady, and some guys in prison, yeah, some guys in prison. But you see, people who have other things to do in life besides reading the Bible do it. They go out and and play their games. They go out and water ski, and they surf, and they go fishing, and they do all sorts of things. But Louis L'Amour's talent and style is so exquisite, so superior, you don't even know that you are reading some pretty technical stuff. You don't even know that you're going into science fiction. You don't even know that you're going into history. Oh, does he love history? You don't even know it, because he makes history so charming and so alive. You don't even know that you're going into a training session, because he makes that training session such an active activity in the now. You're doing it in the now. As I pop back in my mind to the books that I've read of his, and I've read most of them, I can go to each scene where the Sacketts are. I can see their home. I can see the kids. I can see how the parents are training them, how they have many demands upon them, and how they're fulfilling them. And he didn't really go into great detail, but he painted the people, and the people lived in that type of environment. Now, he knew it. Now, the Zane Grey books are excellent. They're cowboy books, too. But they don't hold a candle to Louis L'Amour. Louis L'Amour's writing talent is so fantastic. Now, people will, and in prisons they read a lot of Louis L'Amour, but that's because it's easy and good reading. But you don't realize how many people around the world are reading it, too, because it is good. It is good. And anybody who belittles it, they haven't read it, you can be sure. It's just a cowboy book, you know. That guy, oh, he writes all that. He pumps them out. Yes, he does. But he's so full of it. He's so full of the imagination and creativity and wonderful writing talent that for him it's easy. We have a friend who is another crazy person, just like Louis L'Amour, and his name is John Charles Dainty. And John Charles Dainty will sit here and will say, John, tell us a story. And he will make up a story with 20 characters in it. And all these characters maintain their uniqueness, you know, and their place in the story, as though they are real people in his life, as though it's a real activity going on. And some of it is pretty far out, but wonderful, wonderful. And you hear him tell it, and when he's done, you want to say, more please, you know. And that's exquisite writing. That's exquisite storytelling, and that's exquisite speaking. Now, Ellen goes into the beauty shop, and she tells the lady in the beauty shop, oh, I'm so happy that you're whole and perfect, and that you're back on the job again. You're fantastic, you're fantastic. And the lady, oh, yep, 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 yep. And then all the other people around enter into it, and Ellen creates a little masterpiece of a story of how the people respond, and if she wants to ad-lib a little bit, if she wants to make up a little bit, to add a little more color to the story, that's perfectly okay. We'll never know, and it doesn't matter, but it's her story. And she tells it with such charm and such imagination and such joy, you want to hear more. Ellen, don't you have any more stories like that? Yeah, yeah. Don't you? Yeah, 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 yeah. But tell them, tell them, tell them. Be a Louis L'Amour and write your heart out, write your head off. And it's glorious. It is absolutely glorious. When you do as we say here, a writer learns from those who are superior. You say, well, Louis L'Amour is not superior, he's a... Oh, yeah? Tell me the name of some of our authors today who write Connecticut, who write Hawaii. Michener, you know. Michener writes books that are 2 to 3 to 4 inches thick, at least 3 inches thick, and they're just full of stuff. He has his staff gather together the information, gather together the details so that he can write. Did Louis L'Amour do that? Yes, quite likely. Quite likely, for the volumes that he put out, he had a staff of people who would bring together things for him. Not quite like our friend Michener or these other people who write volume after volume after volume after volume. They have the imagination, and all they do is they're the Michelangelo. They don't create the stone. They don't create the canvas. But they create the picture on the canvas. They create the statue that emerges out of the marble. And this is what a great writer is. His writing, his story emerges out of the marble of words and ideas and then gets put down. And many a publisher doesn't recognize a fabulous writer, as with Jonathan Livingston Seagull, you know. The minute Jonathan Livingston Seagull hit the street and hit it well, oh boy, it hit very well. Then Illusions came out by Richard Bach. And it was good, but it lacked the love, the sensitivity, the depth that Jonathan had. Jonathan was a book, it's a one-time book. And Richard Bach, I'm afraid, is a one-time person. Although he rode on the shirt tails of Jonathan into his other stuff. He was a writer before. He wrote many books before. He wrote at least a dozen books before. He was editor of the Flying Magazine and so forth. You know, a fantastic guy. But when Jonathan came to him and he wrote it, it was the very depth of his soul that was being revealed, the very depth of his consciousness which was coming out. And you might say it's like Jesus Christ, but my, a million miles away, everything's like Jesus Christ and good. But that is from him, from his heart, from his soul. And everyone can read it and feel good about it. Every minister can read it and say, wow, yeah. And every heathen can read it and say, wow, yes. We use it as a course book in our program, and people all over the world did not even know about it. They did not even know about it, and we promoted it. And we promoted it in my lectures and my talks, and in every service that I gave for a wedding or a funeral, I incorporated parts of it into it. And pretty soon, all over Europe, they started buying it. Not necessarily because of me, but somebody let them know about it. And many of them who hadn't read it before, of our friends, read it. Wow! You know. But you see, there's a style that Richard Bach had, but Richard Bach didn't know that style. Richard Bach used it for a little while, and he used it a little bit more in Illusions, but then he tried to write a bunch more, and they all fell short. And I might offer the primary reason they fell short was that he started writing to appease rather than to appeal. He felt he had to have women in his book. Jonathan Livingston Seagull was all about male seagulls, no women. And it was good. Not that it was, but it was everybody. The male was the female and the female was the male. But the thing is, he didn't say sissy, you know. And then in Illusions, he started bringing women in. And he started indicating women. And then There's No Such Place as Far Away, and many of the other books that followed it, every one of them was brought in by his wife and his girlfriends. And they tried to, and his publishers who were women, they tried to bring in, and it fell flat on his face because it wasn't the essence of Richard Bach writing from the soul of himself. It was Richard Bach writing from the desire of his publisher and the desire of the people. If it had been up to the publisher, the first book, Jonathan, would never got off the ground because he tried 7 years at different publishers to get it out and it didn't go. Now, interesting. And then all of a sudden, it took. The time was right. The book was right. Everything was right. Now, I would not recommend that you use Jonathan as your symbol or your sample of exquisite writing, even though it is. But there are so many subtleties in Jonathan that are not seen in normal reading. You don't see the backgrounds of how the parents are talking to him. You don't see the backgrounds of how he is talking to the other seagulls. You don't see the background of him seeing his own personal dignity of, but Mom, I've got to find out how it is. This is what every human being wants to do, but hasn't often the courage to do it. But when you have the courage to find out just the writing skill of Louis L'Amour, and you have the courage to do that, then you will be producing exquisite writings. You will not be a Michener, which is a manufacturing machine. And good, people read it. But they put it down. Once they've read it, they put it down. In the Louis L'Amour books, you keep them in your file and you read them again and again and again. And if you don't read them, you pick them up in your mind and you relive the walking drums. You relive the haunted mesa. You relive the Crockett. You relive. I mean, here, I haven't thought about those books for years, and they're as rich and personal and present in my mind today as they were when I read them and as I reread them. Mm-hmm. A writer learns from those who are superior, but not necessarily those that are financially superior, those who are volume superior, but those who are quality superior. What message did Louis L'Amour want to put across? The message of universal love between all mankind. Louis L'Amour was a moralist. Everything had to be moral, even though things were not moral sometimes. He found the morality in him, which is great. When he was talking about the ancient Spanish cultures and the Moors that had moved into Spain and how they were doing things to the nation, he told why they did it, why their culture called for them to do that. And immediately, instead of having them be strangers to you, they were friends and neighbors. There was something you understand. And what a beautiful thing to do. I mean, he gave humanity the greatest gift, I would say, even beyond the Bible, because he gave them living in the now. A wonderful treat. Let's us live in the now and have a great time doing it, because that's what life is all about, and that's what you and I are all about. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you. I love you. I love you.